Deep in History is independent and proudly listener supported. Before we begin, I'd like to thank my newest patrons, Stuart and Kiana, who went to patreon.com/deepinthehistory and pledged their support for just 10 cents a day. Kiana and Stuart, my new historians, I salute you and thank you from the center of my being. A strange time is upon us. People pounding pumpkin spice and howling at the moon. Feral Kennedys terrorizing the wilderness of the Northeast, waiting for their time to pounce and rise to power. There is a reason for this, of course, for we are fast approaching the day when the veil between our world and the world of the spirits is at its thinnest. A time when many believe ghosts and specters are free to show themselves at their most powerful and walk among mortals. You may think, nay, even believe, that such things are a silly modern contrivance, a distraction from the mundane and unfulfilling nature of life in late-stage capitalism. But you would be wrong. Hauntings, spirits, and ghosts have existed, well, as long as we have. Today I bring you a chilling account of a paranormal investigation launched during the early Roman Empire. So, this is the tale of three ghostly encounters from the ancient world. A tale that should remind us all that no matter how far we have come as a species, so little of our nature has changed. Halloween with your lore master, deep in a history style. So take a deep breath, let it out slowly, put some smoke in the air if you choose, and come dream with me as we go deep into a correspondence from the first century in the Common Era that reveals that investigating the paranormal has been with humanity at least since the Empire rose from the ashes of the Republic. Welcome to the curious case of Athenodorus. Gaius, Plinius, Caecilius, Secundus, known to us more commonly as Pliny the Younger, was a lawyer, author, and magistrate in the Roman Empire during the latter part of the first century. As he rose through the cursus honorum, he would become a member of the judicial council to Emperor Trajan, and would end his career as imperial governor of Bithynia and Pontus in Asia. Throughout his career, filled with dignitas and auctoritas, he proved to be a prolific writer and enjoyed correspondence with many friends and colleagues throughout the empire. 247 of these priceless letters from our past have survived, and today I will read one he wrote to a dear friend, asking for wisdom regarding otherworldly things, seeking advice and counsel on his investigation of the paranormal. Pliny the Younger's letter goes like this. Sura. The present recess from business we are now enjoying affords you leisure to give, and me to receive, instruction. I am extremely anxious, therefore, to know whether you believe in the existence of ghosts, and whether they have a real form, and are sorts of divinities, or are only the visionary impressions of terrified imaginations. What particularly inclines me to believe in their existence is a story which I heard of Curtius Rufus. When he was in low circumstances and unknown in the world, he attended the governor of Africa into that province. One evening, as he was walking in the public portico, there appeared to him a figure of a woman of unusual size and of beauty more than human. As he stood there, terrified and astonished, she told him that she was the tutelary power that presided over Africa, and was come to inform him of the future events of his life, that he should go back to Rome to enjoy high honors there, and return to Africa invested with proconsular dignity, and there should die. Every circumstance of this prediction actually came to pass. It is said further that upon his arrival at Carthage, as he was coming out of the ship, the same figure met him on the shore. It is certain, at least, that being seized with a fit of illness, though there were no symptoms in his case, that led those about him to despair for his life, he instantly gave up all hope of recovery, apparently judging the truth of the future part of the prediction by what had already been fulfilled, and of the approaching misfortune from his former prosperity. Now the following story, which I am going to tell you just as I heard it, is it not more frightening than the former, while quite as thought-provoking? There was in Athens a large and roomy house, which had such a bad reputation that no one lived there. In the dead of night, a noise resembling the clashing of iron was frequently heard, which, if you listen more attentively, sounded like the rattling of chains, distant at first, but approaching nearer by degrees. Immediately afterwards, a specter appeared in the form of an old man, of extremely emaciated and squalid appearance, with a long beard and disheveled hair, rattling the chains on his hands and feet. The distressed occupants, meanwhile, passed their wakeful nights under the most dreadful terror imaginable. This, as it broke their rest, ruined their health, and brought on distempers, even leading to death. Even in the daytime, though the spirit did not appear, yet the impression remained so strong upon their imaginations that it still seemed before their eyes and kept them in perpetual fear. Eventually, the house was entirely abandoned to the ghosts, being deemed absolutely uninhabitable. However, in the hopes that some tenant might be found who was ignorant of its history, a notice was put up advertising it for rent or sale. It happened that Athenodorus, the philosopher, came to Athens at this time, and, reading the notice, inquired about the price. The extraordinarily low price raised his suspicions. Nevertheless, when he heard the whole story, so far from being discouraged, he was more inclined to rent it, which he did. When it grew towards evening, he ordered a couch to be prepared for him in the front part of the house, and, after calling for a light, together with his pencil and tablets, directed all his people to retire. But that his mind might not, for want of employment, be open to the vain terrors of imaginary noises and spirits, he applied himself to writing with the utmost attention. The first part of the night passed in entire silence as usual. At length a clanking of iron and rattling of chains was heard. However, he neither lifted up his eyes nor laid down his pen, but in order to keep calm and collected, tried to pass the sounds off to himself as something else. The noise increased and advanced nearer, till it seemed at the door, and at last in the chamber. He looked up and recognized the ghost exactly as it had been described to him. It stood before him, beckoning with its fingers, like a person who summons another. Athenodorus in reply made a sign with his hand that it should wait a little, and turned his eyes upon his papers. The ghost then rattled his chains over the head of the philosopher, who, looking up and seeing it beckoning as before, immediately arose, light in hand, and followed it. The ghost slowly stalked along, as if encumbered with its chains, and, turning into the courtyard of the house, suddenly vanished. Athenodorus, being thus deserted, made a mark with some grass and leaves on the spot where the spirit had left him. The next day he gave information to the magistrates and advised them to order that spot be dug up. This was accordingly done, and the skeleton of a man in chains was found there. The body, having lain a considerable time in the ground, was putrefied and moulded away from the fetters. The bones were collected and publicly buried, and the ghost, having been appeased by the proper ceremonies, haunted the house no more. This story I believe upon the testimony of others. What I'm going to tell you next, I give upon my own. I have a freedman named Marcus, who is by no means illiterate. One night, as he and his younger brother were lying together, he fancied he saw somebody upon his bed, who took out a pair of scissors, and cut off the hair from the top part of his head, and in the morning his hair was indeed cut, the clipping scattered about the floor. A short time after this, an event of similar nature gave credence to the former story. A young lad of my family was sleeping in his apartment with the rest of his companions, when two persons clad in white came in, as he says, through the windows, cut off his hair as he lay, and then returned the same way they had entered. The next morning it was found that this boy had just been served as the other, and there was the hair again, spread about the room. Nothing very remarkable followed these events, unless perhaps that I escaped a prosecution in which, if Emperor Domitian, whose reign in which this happened, had lived some time longer, I should certainly have been involved. For after the death of that emperor, articles of impeachment against me were found in his writing table, which had been exhibited by Cyrus. It may therefore be conjecture, since it is customary for persons under any public accusation to let their hair grow. Thus cutting off the hair of my servants was a sign I should escape the imminent danger that threatened me. Let me urge you, then, to give this question your mature consideration. The subject deserves your examination, and I trust I am not altogether unworthy of sharing in the abundance of your superior wisdom. And though you should, as usual, strike a balance between two opposing views, yet I hope you will lean more in one direction than the other, lest having consulted you in order to have my doubt settled, you should leave me in the same suspense and indecision that prompted me to learn your opinion in the first place. Farewell, Gaius. That was Pliny the Younger's letter. Sadly, Sura's reply is lost to history. A magistrate of Imperial Rome launching an inquiry into ghosts. What a loss. I would like to take a moment to highlight the insight into the mind of Athenodorus, and thus the mindset of an ancient Greek philosopher. Even with the freaky noises, he kept writing. Even when confronted with a horrifying specter wailing and rattling his chains, he tells it to wait, because he had to finish writing his thought for fear of losing it forever. His thoughts were his philosophy. I love that. I'm so glad I got to share this wonderful tiny fragment of rather paranormal history with you. The first origin crossover of the epic chronicle of how the Republic fell to the Empire, Versus, is up next. An ode to the first appearance of classic characters in Marvel Comics that would have universe-altering effects, like Galactus or Doctor Doom. Characters that develop into dominant forces. Anyone can pick up a history book and learn what someone did. I want you to know each man in the origin episodes intimately, so that you can understand their character and thus gain insight into why they did what they did. And it doesn't get more intimate than when you move through the streets of Rome with Lucius Cornelius Sulla Felix. Prepare to dream with me as we become one with Sulla as he penetrates every echelon of Roman society. Experience the moment that defined him, for it is impossible to know him without understanding it. His first time with his best friend of his formative years, the utterly enchanting Nicopolis, the most famous courtesan in the Mediterranean world, where their souls mate. Then, total war, as Sulla joins Consul Marius mid-campaign with the auxiliary cavalry he'd been left behind to assemble in Italy and drill and train. Immediately after arriving in Numidia, he's forced into fighting in his first major battle, the epic Second Battle of Cirta. With just 100 miles of march to reach the safety of their winter quarters, the legions of Gaius Marius found themselves under assault for days. The situation was desperate. Jugurtha and his ally King Bocchus of Mauritania have the legions outnumbered 4-1. And in the midst of this desperate struggle for survival, the newly minted quaestor Sulla led his cavalry like killer bees on the swarm. Sulla wasn't just a lover, he was a fighter, and a battlefield tactician on a scale Rome had not seen since Gaius Marius. And after the battle that poets call the Knights of the Bandits, word of his feats on the battlefield came to Rome. And the nobles and optimates began to realize that if the plebs had found their Achilles in Gaius Marius, they had found their Hector. Versus Origins, so seductive. Coming soon. Warning, it gets erotic. Thank you for listening to Deep into History. Please remember to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or any platform you use. It really helps draw listeners to the experience. I sincerely hope you take a moment to howl at the moon in the next few days. Trust me, it feels incredible. Have a safe and happy Halloween. And as always, my friend, I truly look forward to the next time we go deep.